no helicopters have been procured for me to go to golf course. Thank you.
I've never said he wasn't a great politician. I'm just saying he's a
off. He's listening to you.
How'd you play out there today?
Well, I found the conditions challenging. Mostly because there's no grass on the golf course. But there never has been.
I'm thinking about the swag bag. I hope the swag bag.
When you got three crevices on the green, your course is trash.
What's happening, folks? Welcome back to the Beltway Golfer Podcast. This is episode 72. I'm your host, Alex Dixon. For this episode, we are joined by one of the owners and founders of Peak Golf Fitness and Peak Athletics, Mr. Jason Misch. We had a great conversation at his new facility out in Ashburn, which he's getting ready to have a grand opening for, which is their second location, followed up by their location up in Rockville, which is Peak Golf Fitness. Continuing on the whole topic of golf performance and how golfers, both young, not so young, and old, stay in shape and improve their physical fitness and their performance in this game of golf. So we had a great time talking with Jason. And if you're not familiar with Peak Golf or Peak Athletics, do check them out, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. A couple other things. One, if you haven't heard, we're hosting another event. This one is out at Mount Vernon Country Club on Monday, October 23rd. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're doing a two-person better ball again. Anybody's welcome. There are spots available, so go to beltwaygolfer.com, click on outings, and you will see all the details there. We'd love to have you out and join us on Monday, October 23rd at Mount Vernon Country Club. The event is called the Silver Dollar Shootout. It's going to be a lot of fun. This podcast, I got to mention our sponsor, Union Green, always in play. Union Green makes two fantastic golf balls, the Pin Drop and the T-Bird. They've got some killer gear. They're all about public golf, municipal golf, and playing local golf. I've been playing the Union Green Pin Drop for a while now, and I love it. You know, it's an affordable ball. It's got great distance. It performs well for me. It's got everything I need in a ball. And I really like the message that Union Green has promoting public local golf. So go check them out on social media at Golf Union Green and at their website, uniongreen.com. And forgot to mention, they're even running pretty sweet promotion on their website right now at uniongreen.com. Buy any two items of apparel or hats and get a free dozen T-Bird golf balls. So go check that out. Pretty sweet deal. And also almost forgot to mention is we got a discount code now. If you enter Beltway Golfer 20 at checkout on uniongreen.com, you get 20% off your order. And we get credit for it. So go use that. Beltway Golfer 20 at uniongreen.com if you're shopping with Union Green, which we encourage you do so. What else is going on? Myself, I've played some golf. Had a interesting event I'd love to mention. I actually made it out to an unusual golf event, the Mad Scramble. Eric Anders Lang and his Random Golf Club visited East Potomac's White Course last week. Joined that. I was a little skeptical at first, but I had a lot of fun. Basically 130 or so golfers all did a scramble together. It's pretty wild. Nothing like anything I'd ever seen. But I enjoyed it. Even got a couple shots that were used by the group. And it was fun. It was a cool community. You know, I think it took a couple holes for everyone to kind of warm up. They were serving beers out there. And, you know, by the fourth or fifth hole, any skepticism that I had went away, and I had a great time. So if you're not familiar with the Random Golf Club, go check them out. I know they're kind of on tour doing these mad scrambles, and it's certainly something quite different. But I enjoyed it. If you follow us on social media, especially on Instagram, and had a lot of fun with the drone recently, got it up all over town and working on some projects with the drone. So stay tuned and give us a follow on Instagram if you don't, at Beltway Golfer. And, you know, summer got busy, didn't put out a ton of pods, but I think that's going to change by the looks of it here in the fall. We've got a bunch of new podcasts in the works. Anyway, that's about it. Let's get to the conversation. Here is our conversation with Jason Misch of Peak Golf Fitness and Peak Athletics. Here's episode 72 of the Beltway Golfer Podcast. Enjoy.
All right, we are out in Ashburn, Virginia. Is this peak golf fitness or peak fitness?
This is peak athletics.
Peak athletics.
Peak athletics.
I'm glad I clarified that.
So we started, our original company is in Rockville, Maryland. We started in 2009, called Peak Golf Fitness, right there by the old Red Gate Golf Course.
Yep.
Been rolling since then. And we've been looking at moving and expanding out to the Northern Virginia area. And finally this year it came to fruition. And so we chose Ashburn with a lot of the students that we had coming in from Virginia that were driving to Rockville every month.
You're open here, but you haven't even done your official grand opening yet. We were just talking about probably in the next month or two. We're going to post that when that date comes official.
Yeah, so we're doing tours right now. We're training folks. We're still finishing touches. We're adding a few things here and there. So we didn't want to go full grand opening, but we're looking at a full grand opening experience open house sometime in early October.
So this I just got the tour of this facility. We'll get into this facility and the location. It's real quick for any beer drinkers out there. It's in the exact same parking lot as Lost Rhino Brewery. So that should kind of coordinate you a little bit. But like you said, just like a mile or so from 1757 in Ashburn.
Yep.
This spring, so we're taping this here in August of 2023, but this spring I came out to your facility in Rockville that you just talked about, your original facility that opened up in 2009. I had never been there before. I kind of popped in and we got to talking, and next thing you know, you got me signed up for an evaluation and we did the whole class. So let's kind of, as we kind of get into what Peak, so up there, let me clarify this one more time. So there, the official name is Peak Golf Fitness.
Correct.
And here it's Peak Athletics.
Peak Athletics. So
let's start there. Why the difference?
So the difference is myself and my co-owner, Ramsey Williams, started Peak Golf Fitness. And when we expanded to the Ashburn area, we teamed up with Pat McGuire and Lisa Deal of Raspberry Golf.
Okay.
So they have quite a few courses and driving ranges in the area. We are very team-based approach. So what we want to do is work within a team. So we work with the golf instructors. So most of our clientele is actually referral. In Rockville, as we're marketing Ashburn, we're 99% referral based from outside instructors. So instructors at the local clubs send us folks. We do a whole evaluation process through a 3D motion capture. We collect all this data, all this graphs of hitting shots. We build reports for the instructor, share the report with the instructor. Then we go into a physical eval and try to figure out why you do what you do. So our thing in our evaluation is our 3D tells us what you do. Our physical eval tells us why you do it.
Got it.
And sometimes why is good, sometimes why is bad. So our goal is to try to work on the strengths, but also raise that floor with some of the weaknesses.
So most golfers, especially avid golfers listening to this podcast, are very, very familiar with TPI. And the title is Performance Institute, where, if I recall correctly, you kind of that's where your training began. But TPI is also very well known for their 16-point eval. I did a podcast with another local trainer, Dr. Casey Edwards. He put me through the 16-point eval. It's somewhere on YouTube. It's got way too many views because it's really embarrassing because I'm so inflexible and I was a little hungover. But you told me that, and I went through it, your evaluation goes well beyond that. So can you talk a little bit about kind of TPI, your background with it, and then why the Peak Fitness or Peak Golf Fitness eval go, like how many steps, because I know it was a lot, I forget the number, but how many and why it goes so far beyond?
Yeah. So I was really lucky. In grad school, studying biomechanics and exercise physiology for my master's degree, and was looking for jobs. Job pops up, it's for a master golf fitness instructor.
Okay.
As an avid golfer myself, playing tournament golf to college, that obviously piqued my interest. So I applied for the job out in Maryland, not knowing anybody. Happened to get hired by a company called Club Golf, which was Dr. Greg Rose's company pre-TPI. So they had so many tour players coming into Club Golf, TPI.
Dr. Greg Rose, who's one of the founders of TPI.
Of TPI.
And which some people might not realize, he's a University of Maryland guy.
University of Maryland guy. Grew up, I believe, in Rockville, Maryland.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Got hired in with this company and also realized, holy cow, this is a great opportunity. It was around some of the brightest minds in the world and just was kind of a fly on the wall. Really went to learning. Stayed on after he had moved on to TPI, stayed on and was the director there at Club Golf. And about 2009, as everything was changing in the economies and all of that, decided I wanted to go out on my own. So we went out on our own, went back to the original model that Greg had, which was we're here to help the golf instructor. Mm-hmm. Like our job is, we always tell our staff, our job is to make their job easier. So if we get you moving better, you can now do things that your instructor asked you to do, and now you have more success as well. Yeah. And the instructor, or as knowledgeable as they are, can really help you.
So a couple things on the timeline. So Club Golf was his kind of local facility here, but he had already started TPI. TPI predates 2009, right?
Yeah, so about 2005 I moved out here. So it was just the start of TPI. I think the first season of Golf Fitness Academy on Golf Channel was filmed that year.
Okay.
So he was out there, but hadn't really established TPI as what it is today.
Like they didn't have like their certificate.
They were just starting it
and all that.
Yeah, Dr. Rose had started one called Advantage Golf back in the day.
Okay.
And so it was in the midst of switching that over to his TPI, building his advisory board out there. And so it was great to be on the ground floor.
Yeah.
You know, so I joke that I've been doing this a very long time compared to a lot of folks.
Sure. And we'll get into some of your credentials because the proof is there. But so when you opened up Peak Golf Fitness in Rockville, at the beginning, were you just essentially going to use the 16-point TPI plan?
No. So when we were in Club Golf, we had a much more in-depth plan. So the plan was we did a lot of manual muscle testing. We did things that almost all of us had therapy backgrounds of one level or another. Mm-hmm. So doing a lot of hands-on things was common.
Okay.
And as it was evolving, one of the things we realized is if you're doing this with a golf professional, you're on a range. Mm-hmm. You don't really want to lay on the ground on a range because grass, wet, clothes, you dress nice.
Sure.
So it was able to pick the main 12 to 16 points that we wanted to see that we could do mostly standing. Mm-hmm. Because we still had that background and we work on the manual therapy, like out here we actually have two physical therapists in-house that do physical therapy. Our backgrounds, we still do a lot of the manual muscle testing. We do the expanded breakdown. So our screen can range anywhere from 38 to 50 screens.
Wow.
Our 50 screen is typically with our competitive players. Mm-hmm. We look at how mobile all your joints are. We look at how you move. So coordination patterns, can you separate upper and lower, shoulder, knee, hip? Then we get into all the strengths and controls of those. And then our power screens are pretty intense.
What are some of those areas that TPI doesn't look at?
It's not that they don't look at them. They look at them from a much higher level where we break it down.
Okay.
So you may fail a disassociation test. Now we're going to break that down into different levels to figure out, is it a what we call a top-end issue, where it's just all the pieces together don't work together, but individually they do? Or is there a breakdown in certain areas? So if we break it down, now we can actually train those specific points, and it helps us to take a much deeper dive into what's going on.
So to dive in a little bit, since a lot of the, I'm so bad with a lot of this terminology, but like the disassociation, would you like just for that piece, for example, you're really talking about upper body, lower body.
Yeah.
And if you're failing it, they're not disassociating because you want your torso and your hips to be disassociated. Because I know I struggle with that.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. I mean, think of most of us who aren't playing professional golf. It's most a lot of our clients. We sit in a desk all day.
Yeah.
The desk actually turns for us. So what happens is our hips and our shoulders kind of become one piece. We don't know how to make those two pieces. Well, in the golf swing, we need your hips and your shoulders to work independent and together. So they have to be a little bit separate, but they have to be able to work together in order to effectively transfer speed. It helps with club path and plane, power production, force generation. But because of our daily lives, that puts a lot of us behind the eight ball right away.
So 2009, you talk about just opening up the location for the first time. Did you already have some clients built in from Club Golf? Or did you, how did you start acquiring your first clients?
I was lucky when I was at Club Golf, I came from the golf world, so worked in private clubs all growing up, played golf my entire life, and it started to establish some really good relationships with some of the top professionals in the area, such as Steve Bostosh was one of our big referral sources early on. And I was talking to Steve.
Four streams for a long time. He's at
Members Club.
PBDI,
great facility up at PBDI. Yep. And we started just talking about things. And he loved the way we trained his athletes. Mm-hmm. So as I was expanding and going out on my own, he kind of came along with us and referred his people to us there to work with myself, and started as a one-man show. Luckily, blessed now that we have about six full-time trainers now besides myself, and now a whole staff of people.
At the beginning, were you the only trainer?
I was the only trainer for a long time. My wife didn't see me very much. So it's great having three kids. Like, I know you have kids yourself. Yeah. It's nice to be able to spend that family time as well. And my staff is in both facilities is amazing.
Yeah.
Every one of our staff members played golf to at least college. We have staff members who played up to 4 years on the European Tour. I think right now with our full-time staff, our highest handicap index is 2.1.
Oh, wow.
That's the highest. Our lowest index is plus 3.8. So we're all...
That helps with some credibility.
We're all golfers. We like to play. We like to play competitively. But it helps. Our number one thing is our teamwork with the local instructors. And because we are in the golf world, we're able to communicate in that way. So when we talk to your teaching professional, we can relate on that level as well. And we understand some of the growing pains. Because sometimes everybody thinks improvement's linear. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of should always keep going up. But that's not always the case. So talking about that ability to separate.
Yep.
If we get you using your lower body, one, it's probably going to add some speed. Well, that's going to change your timing. So early on, if we also add some speed, you may not hit it this straight because you haven't learned the timing piece of it yet.
Golf fitness is so huge now. You've been doing this, 2009 and even prior, as you just said. You know, what were PGA pros? You said they didn't. You're not doing a lot of lying down on the range, but are they like, what are they teaching pre TPI and pre 2005? Are they not looking at this kind of stuff at all? Are they just doing some simple stretches? Like, what did golf fitness look like in the 90s?
There wasn't. I remember graduating high school in 1997 and our strength and conditioning coach at our high school kicking the golfers out of the gym so you didn't get tight. No lifting, no anything. Luckily for me, I was playing hockey and basketball and baseball, so we were in there the other 9 months out of the year. And it piqued my interest when I got into sports medicine. Mm-hmm. But other than probably Gary Player, who was
obsessed
with fitness.
Yeah.
I mean, it really became like a newer thing, probably early 2000s. Because if you're a high-level athlete, what's your edge? Talent level is talent level, but the talent level on the tours, even from the PGA Tour through the mini tours, is very tight. Yeah. So what kind of can set you apart? And that's a lot of your speed gains, the clubhead speed. They're talking about the ball rollback stuff and all the random things.
Yeah.
We have better athletes playing golf now than we've ever had.
Right.
But people forget some of the top athletes in the older generations. From what I understand, Arnold Palmer was good enough to be a double-A baseball player. Jack Nicklaus was recruited to play basketball at Ohio State and chose to play golf. Like, two of the best golfers in history were exceptional athletes besides that.
Right.
Now it's just our players are much more athletic. If you saw the kids who roll through here that are playing college golf right now, when they're in high school, they look like athletes. We joke that you walk in the gym and you don't see golfers. Because everybody's like, what's a golfer look like?
Yeah.
It doesn't. These are very fit, athletic individuals.
What does your client look like? Like, especially over the last 14 years in Rockville, you had kind of talked to me a little bit about how there's certainly age ranges. There was the younger group and kind of the older group. I think that maybe has more to do with time and finances. Yeah. But what is the average client of PGA Golf look like?
I mean, we've been lucky to have a very successful junior program. We call our Compete program. We're trying to get the kids ready to play competitive golf at one level or another, teaching them about how to eat and drink on the golf course, how to take care of their body, understanding travel and stress, and trying to keep them from getting hurt because they are swinging faster.
Right.
Injuries on the PGA Tour are at an all-time high because people are moving so fast right now. And if they're not really taking care of themselves on and off the golf course, that's a big issue. So teaching those kids how to manage that.
Do these kids, when they come to you, is that a big thing that them and their coaches or their parents are looking for? Is we want more speed, or we just want to we want to be able to build speed in a way where they're not going to get hurt?
Yeah, speed wins. Right. I mean, I believe, speaking of TPI, the power, there were power certifications. And the numbers are probably a couple years old now, but I think 2 or 3 years ago, they looked at the top five guys in driving distance and top five guys in driving accuracy. It was 55.6 million for driving distance, 5.6 million for driving accuracy. Wow. So distance does matter.
Sure.
The courses are so long. NCAAs, I think last year, played over 7,400 yards. So if you're not hitting at 300 yards, it's actually really hard to play college golf nowadays. And that's why you're seeing kids. We have a few college kids in here that are over 190 ball speed. And that's getting more and more
common.
We have a couple young ladies that are over 105 mile an hour driver speed right now, over 150 ball speed. So they're carrying it in the 260, 270 range.
So when they, you know, I'm sure it varies, but is there a typical age when a junior, just focusing on the junior golfers for now, like when a junior golfer comes to peak?
Yeah, we really try to look at them into their growth spurt. So pre-growth spurt, we have a developmental program.
Like puberty, like 12, 13, 14?
Girls and boys are different.
Sure.
So girls, a little bit earlier, girls are 11 to 13-ish in that range. And boys are like 12 and a half, 13 to 15, 16 years old.
Okay.
And if we have kids that age, we typically want to sit down and meet with them, talk with their parents. Because before that, they don't have testosterone. They don't have a lot of the hormones needed. And it's a skill building time for them. They're not growing very fast. So good lessons with their instructors.
So much changes during that period too. Like you could teach them something.
They can learn so much so fast.
Right.
And at that point, that's a good time for skill building. We just ask parents, let your kids play all the sports.
Right.
Let them be athletic. The best athletes we have walk in the door end up being our best players. Hmm. Even before. We work a lot on athleticism because we need to, because people think they need to do it year-round.
Yeah.
They don't have to play golf year-round. One of the best guys from their area, Denny McCarthy, played basketball at Georgetown Prep.
Right.
He was starting point guard, put the clubs away for 4 months, 4 or 5 months every year.
Right. So based on kind of what you're saying, and you typically see these kids come in and have the most impact during that growth spurt, so they, before they kind of start that growth period, is that too early to start looking at some of the stuff?
It is, for the most part. We try to talk to the parents. We do try to do classes that involve skipping, running, jumping, throwing, but we do that on a much more informal basis.
Mm-hmm.
Once they hit their growth, once they hit those growth spurts in those age ranges, we call those speed windows.
Okay.
Now when you start to grow really fast, now we can make you fast. So as you're getting all these new muscles, your body's changing, you're getting all these new hormones, the amount of speed that you can gain during those windows is insane. So when you're getting all these new muscles, if you do slow sedentary things, they function more slow.
Mm-hmm.
If you do explosive, fun, jumping, throwing, move fast things, mm-hmm. they can be faster. I mean, we've seen, and this is by all means not a normal thing, but we've been lucky to catch a couple kids right into their growth spurt, like you know, when perfect worlds meet, right?
Yeah.
Trained and did really hard. We had we've had more than one kid gain more than 14 miles an hour in 6 months of driver speed during a growth spurt, where we're talking 50 yards of carry over a winner with a driver.
I'm sure his high school coach was psyched.
Yeah, but that's not our expectation, but if you're doing those fast things, then when you stop growing, now we can actually start making you stronger.
Is that I guess I never knew that equation when you said, so 14 miles an hour faster in swing speed equates to about 50 yards of carry. Is there a general rule of thumb, like, you know, 5-1 or something?
Yeah,
or
Pat has a rule. It's like 1-2-5 or 1-3-5. For every mile an hour of clubhead speed, it's like 2 or 3 miles an hour of ball speed, which is 5 yards of carry.
Got it. Okay.
So something
that can multiply quickly. Right?
Yeah. So something in that range. Don't quote me on that,
sure,
but that's.
Right. Yeah, I got it. We'll have to look that up. So one of the things, and we might have changed subject mm-hmm. before I give you a chance to fully answer this, but I know you told me this off camera before. So like, because your clients, you've got these junior golfers, mm-hmm. but then you've also kind of got I don't know if they're necessarily empty nesters, but the folks that are a little bit older, you know, maybe the kids are, they're not dealing with running kids around all the time. Maybe they got some capital.
Yeah.
So you've got the older folks.
Yes.
And where I'm going with this, and not to cut you off, but is when you're looking at these junior golfers and they're going through that growth spurt and you're getting them and working with them to build strength and elasticity to create this swing speed, how different is that when you get a 50-year-old that comes in who's a 12 handicap or 15 handicap and is trying to just do better at his club championship?
Yeah. Well, the younger kids will learn faster. They're much more, their nervous system is more pliable the younger we are. We kind of, the old quote, getting set in your ways. Mm-hmm. It just means we have to work a little harder.
Sure.
As we get, in our upper age group, we kind of see a lot of our clients are college age and younger, mm-hmm. and then kind of that 45, 50 plus as a father of three that have almost three teenagers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of time involved in that growing up. I know you're...
I'm 40. I'm right at that number. I'm 45 myself, and things are starting to break down rapidly.
Yeah. And then kids and sports, and we joke that my wife and I are full-time Uber drivers on the side, trying to go from one event to another with the kids. So there's just a time standpoint. And then, kind of late 40s, 50s, we see the folks that kids are maybe teenagers. They can drive themselves around a little bit. Yeah. And you get some free time back in your life. And most of us probably fairly competitive in one thing or another. And we'd like to get back to that.
Yeah.
Golf is a great retirement sport, something we can do every day.
But beyond, obviously the kids are more like sponges and they learn better and they're more willing to try new things and get things to stick from a teacher's perspective. But, when the 45 or 50-year-old comes in, and maybe they once knew some things, or mm-hmm. they're just on the decline as far as the way their body moves. Are you like that about maybe not necessarily the evaluation, but once you start working with them, is what you're working with them and what you have them working on, is it that much different?
You would be surprised at the amount of overlap. Typically with our more established clients, as I'm getting older, I hate to use the word older, so we'll go more established. We have to do a little more of reawakening those patterns. Those patterns typically are just sleeping. We haven't used them or accessed them in a long time.
Yeah.
They're there. You've created that pattern in your brain. Sometimes we just have to wake those patterns back up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times with our adults, we'll talk about what sports did you play growing up and try to go back to some of those patterns. Like if you're a baseball player, we'll try to use some baseball analogies when we're talking about things. And use that as part of the instruction package and trying to unlock those keys.
Yeah.
But in general, we just have to, the movement, flexibility part, stretching more. We joke a kind of a rule of thumb is you should do some sort of stretching tissue mobility work one day per week for every decade you've been on the earth. So, when you're 20, you might only have to stretch once or twice a week.
I got you.
But when we're 40, 50, we should probably do a little stretching four, five, six times a week to gain that flexibility and mobility, because the biggest thing we've seen with our 3D, and we did a study with this a long time ago actually with Greg, is we looked at it by handicap ranges and by age ranges. We took all the data, mm-hmm. and one of the biggest things we saw was the lack of something called X factor. I think Jim McLean made it, coined that term. It's how much stretch you get between your upper half and your lower half.
Okay, yep.
That was one of the single biggest standouts of what changed over time. So when they were 20 and 30, their X factor was 45, 50 degrees.
Okay.
Also, we got to 50 and 60, it was 30. So they were getting 20 less degrees of stretch. That's 20 less degrees of response for power, because we have to stretch a muscle to make it move fast.
Yeah.
And that's what we see more with actually clubhead speed loss, is that lack of flexibility, mobility, and coordination affects it. It's not because you've become actually that much weaker.
Interesting. I'm experiencing that right now. But I imagine with the older, the more established clients, there's also, things like nagging injury or some injury that happened to them 15, 20 years ago that they got to deal with. And do you have to work around a lot of that, or how do you approach that?
It depends. For that, here in Ashburn, we actually have two physical therapists in-house.
Okay.
So we'll do a little bit of that work. My background, my undergraduate's as a certified athletic trainer, sports medicine, and so I handle a lot of that. And injuries, we compensate very well. And so our goal as training is we actually sometimes attack those areas because we want to break down those compensations. Because the more you compensate, the more you risk injury. Yeah. And we've all, like, if you sprained an ankle, everybody's walked funny, you don't use crutches, and all of a sudden your knee starts hurting you. Our body works in a very complex pattern. So when one part stops working, great athletes figure out a way to put that aside and hide and work it out.
Sure.
And after a while, it just breaks down because it's not designed to take that kind of load and stress. Mm-hmm. So we actually attack those injuries quite a bit of trying to get, like, work through those patterns.
Yeah.
It depends. If it's structural, there's not a lot we can do. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's bone, you broke a bone, there's stuff in your wrist, there's not a lot we can do. But in some of our evaluation, we grade our stuff into three different areas. One's a joint mobility problem.
Okay.
So the joint itself is tight. So things like your hip is really tight, your shoulder joint's really tight. Mm-hmm. We have a tissue tightness. So like my quad,
yep.
You know, my hip flexor, my hamstring, we hear hamstrings all the time, sure. Are really tight. And then the one that kind of gets overlooked a lot of times is a neurological. Is your brain has learned to compensate so well, it uses different muscles and different parts to get a job done.
Okay.
So we actually try to go back in and reprogram, like, hey, when I stand up, I should use my glutes instead of my hamstrings or my quads.
So how do you address that? That's just through repetition?
That's training and repetition.
Yeah.
And that's part of the whole screening process is now we know kind of where you compensate and where you don't. And we'll go reinforce those new patterns back. And you can kind of speak probably to some experience there of, you know, little glute engagement work that we had
doing,
just learning how, like, oh yeah, my butt's supposed to do this work, not my hamstrings or my hips.
Yeah, I mean, the way I was swinging, I wasn't really using my lower body at all. You guys got me on a nice little program that, shamefully, I haven't kept up with as much as I should, and that's a me problem. Can you talk a little bit about, so like when I came into your eval, and you've touched on this a little bit, but the tech, the 3D tech, that mm-hmm. you kind of right off the bat, like the first thing that you look at is seeing how all the different body parts move, which is not part of TPI. Can you talk about just what that's telling you and what it is and the technology you use?
Well, if you go to TPI, they'll hook you up in the same tech.
Okay.
So the tech that we use now is called Golf Biodynamics. It's a guy named Dr. Rob Neal. Has wrote all the software for it out of Florida. He was a teaching professional. I believe he also worked out of the McLean Academy.
Okay.
But basically what it is we call it the MRI of your golf swing. So we hook a bunch of sensors up onto your body with wires. It reads every motion you make to an accuracy of a tenth of a centimeter and a tenth of a degree at 240 pictures per second. So we look at how you move, where you get power, where you lose power, what parts transfer energy efficiently. So if you use your legs a lot, is that speed and power transferring up and getting to the golf club? Because mm-hmm. some people just try really hard and they work really hard and they don't actually get the speed to the club.
Can you give a couple examples of like what you might see in there from a mm-hmm. first evaluation that are like different ends of the spectrum? Like-
yeah. So in our world, there's one of the most important things we look at is called kinematic sequence.
Okay.
It's how you sign your golf swing.
Okay.
The funny thing about kinematics is everybody thinks when you hit a good shot or a bad shot, you did something completely, completely different. Like, oh, I really stood up on that one. We're seeing a good shot and a bad shot. You might move like 0.1 centimeters or 0.2 centimeters different, and you didn't actually stand up. There's more of a timing issue.
You just got lucky on the good one?
Or you got a little unlucky on the bad one.
Okay.
But also, when we're measuring this, we're measuring speeds, and you're talking a high-level player with a driver, the club is moving at over 2,000 degrees per second. And the old saying from TrackMan, I believe, is 3 degrees is in the trees.
Yeah.
So can you imagine trying to square up a club moving that fast? It's amazing we actually hit it on the planet most of the time.
So, that goes right to the point. I mean, you hear so many teachers getting interviewed, and they always say, and I've probably said this to a swing coach before, not that I've taken that many lessons, but you know, all I'm just looking to be more consistent. You know, that's the most common thing. Because I mean, I'll hit, you know, 20 good shots, but then it's just like I hit 10 bad ones. And I'm sure what you hear so often is that when you hear PGA pros that give lessons, is like that's what everybody says.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying is when you actually look at the data and you look at the imagery and you look at how your body's moving is there's always a larger issue going on.
Yeah, a little timing. Timing can be a big influence, because at moving that fast, if you're 0.02 of a second off, that's a lot of club face difference. And that could be related to, this is where some of the physical training comes in. Your muscles are fatigued. You're dehydrated. You haven't ate very much, and now your sugar's low, and you don't have, and your energy has dropped.
Yeah.
Now my timing will change because I just don't have that focus. And it could be something as little as I slept bad last night, or I have something going on outside of my life for most of us. Stress at work, stress, something distracting us, and that changes the way that we move. And so that's why you might have good days and bad days.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that we found over now 18 years of data capture is even our professionals that come in, the thing that changes the most day to day is actually their setup. Like one day they're a little more bent over, a little taller, that can change swing planes. Their raw motions don't change a whole lot from day to day.
Interesting.
And yet some days they're good and some days they're bad without effort to change them.
Interesting.
So that's the biggest kinematics.
I totally believe that. I've noticed that with myself where all of a sudden I just realize that like, what I've been doing in my setup is just so either inconsistent, or I've been set too close to the ball, or sending the ball too far back, or too upright. There's so many things in the setup when all we're kind of trained isn't the right word, but accustomed to thinking about is the swing, when there's so much that goes into what happens before the swing.
Yeah, you'd probably be surprised how much effort the tour players have into making sure they're set up properly for every shot, and we just kind of take it for granted as daily golfers.
So in 18 years of data capture, like you said, like when people come in and you give them that first eval, what is there a most common thing that on day one that they're, people don't realize they're struggling with?
Setup's a big one. Some of the main postures, we have what we call S posture or C posture. S posture is a lot of curve in your lower back.
Okay.
C posture would be a lot of hunched over at address, hands really close. Adding all that extra curve and not knowing how to bend at your hips can limit, just posturally, you could have great amount of turn, but by bad posture, I could limit the amount of turn you get by 40%. So you could have all this range of motion and then just in a bad setup. And then the other part we see a lot of is just people don't know how to use the ground. They don't know how to actually use the force, create force. And that's when you see the PGA Tour players and LPGA Tour players hit it so far, there's a reason you're seeing their feet move. Mm-hmm. That they use the ground so effectively. And most of our amateur players don't know how to use the ground or are unable to from injury. Like, maybe I hurt my knee a long time ago and I learned not to push on that side, so now I stay back. Maybe I sprained an ankle, my low back hurts, because that ground force, yeah, if I'm in bad places, puts a lot of stress on my low back.
Interesting.
So it really varies, and I would say there's never one particular answer. But in that same vein, is we hear, like, you probably hop on YouTube and there's swing fault videos. So like, if you do this, try this.
Yeah.
Well, there are great players on tour that technically have those, we call them swing characteristics. We don't call them faults, because there are players on tour that may do that and have made a lot of money doing that. And for us, if your kinematics are great, then why would we change something that works and is highly efficient?
Yeah.
So that, we are very style agnostic. We don't care of what your swing looks like if it's effective.
But you know, and you know, one of the times I was in I think very early on, you told me how, you were typically not, you don't want to be the swing coach.
No,
not at all. You want to work with the swing coach. How do you work with swing coaches? Do you send them data a lot of times? Do they ask for, can you send me, whatever data capture that you've got going on?
Yeah, we do full breakdowns for the coaches. So we generate a report off our software, and we can generate overlays and averages and everything. And we can do putting, wedge play, iron play, driver play. We can capture all that. We build reports for coaches and give the coaches the information. And then we'll also send them, one of our common questions is, what are you working on with your coach? And explain to me what your struggle is. And then what do you want your good shots to look like? And what are, our joke is, what's the one that makes you want to throw your golf bag in the pond when you start hitting the ball that way?
Yeah.
What are the missed patterns that kind of throw you fits? Because that tells us a lot about what's happening with the club and ball and the way it's being delivered. And then we look at your body and say, well, hey, your hips, you have a really hard time rotating through impact. Well, if you don't rotate through impact, it's going to be really hard to get the club going into out and hit a draw. Yeah. So we can work on those areas. But if your coach is working on that same spot, we'll say, like, hey, this is a knowledge, this could be more of a knowledge-based thing. Or guess what? If you've fractured an elbow and your arm won't straighten and they're trying to get you to do something, we can be like, that's a really tough ask. Maybe our therapist needs some time to work on it. Give us some time to fix that. Maybe pick a different area to make you successful in that kind of middle term. Because let's face it, as golfers, most of us say if we're a 15, we're like, I want to be a 10. Yeah. And then you get to a 10, you're like, I want to be a 7.
Yeah.
It's this
never good enough.
Lifelong process of always trying to improve. And that's kind of one of our feedback being referral based is, I believe, like the industry average for a regular personal trainer at like at a normal gym, they have a client for between 6 and 8 months. Right now, our average member in our facility has been, it's 3.5 years plus.
Let's talk about a couple of your clients. So one of your clients, I saw his bag right out here. You got up on a shelf with some of his accomplishments. Young guy who I saw qualify in a dramatic way for the U.S. Open, local guy Michael Brennan. How long you been working with him?
We started working with Mike probably when he was in 10th grade. He was sent out to us from his swing coach Adam Harrell at 1757 and kind of talked to him. And there's different people when they walk in the door. I like to say Mike has that bulldog in him, mm-hmm. where nicest person in the entire world, but is so like internally competitive. And we were lucky enough to go play golf a couple weeks ago, and he would have wanted to beat me by 30. If he could have, like,
he's what? He's like a sophomore, junior.
He's going into a senior year at Wake right now. I believe he has 7 collegiate victories. One more breaks the Wake Forest all time record.
There's been some pretty decent golfers that played at Wake Forest.
Yeah, I believe he got up to 9 in Wagger, which is the world amateur golf rankings. Mm-hmm. So he was the number 9 ranked amateur in the world.
So someone like Mike, you know, when you started working with him in 10th grade. Like, what did his coach want you to look at? Or what did you start working out with him?
We did our assessment, and then luckily, you know, we've known Adam for a long time, and so we have a great rapport with Adam. And there was things that Adam was seeing in his swing. Obviously, speed is always an issue as we're getting older. I said, it's hard to play college golf if you're not hitting at 300 yards now, especially at that level. Mm-hmm. And we started working off stability. Like, we really didn't even lift weights for probably his first 6 months. Or even talk about lifting weights. We just got him to move better. And by that, he was adding some speed, stability. When you move well and you're stable, you tend to make better contact. The contact's more stable. Maybe, I won't say consistent because that's the golf pro's job, but just allowing him to get the club returning in the same general area more often.
And so what do you do? Like, so you, aside from him coming in and working him personally, do you create like kind of a program? Is it a lot of... You know, because you did a little of this for me. Like, you create a program that he can take it home, work against the wall, you know, floor work, medicine ball work. Like, how do you build stability in a 10th grade kid?
We gave him a lot of homework. We actually have our own app, so you have your workout on your app. Then we see him on a pretty regular basis. We're big into structure here, which is why we do membership-based mostly, is to help people stay on track. Mm-hmm. You know, it's difference in... We can joke with you a little bit of coming in on your own. It's when it becomes kind of available and comfortable in your schedule.
Yeah.
But if you were like, I knew you were going to see us every week, it kind of takes that accountability level up a little bit.
Right, right.
But with that, it started off as some stability and strength stuff. And then with the kids, we know they're going to lift in college. So we're also going to teach them how to lift. Because who wants to go to college and get hurt?
Yeah.
And we see so many people get injured lifting weights improperly. So it started there, and as they get better, we believe that you create like mobility and stability first, and then you start adding speed, strength, and power on top of those good patterns. If you can always make somebody stronger. I just don't want to always strengthen a bad pattern, which just, I call it the ticking time bomb. I make you stronger and stronger and stronger, but when it breaks bigger. Right. So now you're out for longer, or it's a worse injury. We kind of try to go the other way, start slower, ramp it up to get to that high performance. But then you get to be a kid like Mike, who works really hard, and we have, you know, a handful, you know, quite a few juniors that put in a lot of effort, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're plugging along, they're going, and now I believe, you know, he's definitely not short on the college side.
Yeah.
I think he's put a few, qualified a couple of PGA Tour events, and he's puts it out there he moves it pretty well.
He's on the right path.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be known by a lot of folks here, Wilson, if he's not already.
Super hard worker. And that's the thing is, nothing we do is a magic pill.
Right.
Like, hard work, and we can direct you in the right places, but it's still, I wish I had that magic pill, but we'd all be much happier.
So you do a good job of, it's really a rockable location, but I see you also got them here. You got the pennants of all of the colleges and universities that your students. I imagine that's a pretty good recruiting tool for new clients.
You definitely get some questions, but we don't even look. Yes, it's a bonus, but it's also our way of rewarding the kids for their hard work. Is how cool is it? Like, I can think back when I was a high school athlete, to sign a pennant, hang it in a facility, is kind of a representation of I did this work.
Right.
And now every time you come back or your friends come in and they see your name signed on the pennant,
that's cool.
It's a reward. It's, you know, we all need carrots to dangle out in front of us for us to motivate, and that is one that we love because everything we do is about our students. Mm-hmm. If you happen to follow us on social media, you notice we are very poor at posting because it's about our students and our athletes more than it is about us.
Sure.
And so if I could post more about the kids, I would, or adults. Mm-hmm.
One cool thing that you had showed me at your Rockville location, I'm curious if there's going to be a similar type setup here, but your Rockville location, you've got a key fob that you give to a lot of your clients where they can come work out at all hours of the night if they feel like they need to get some swing work or do some some work at the gym at 3 a.m. They have access to do that.
Yeah, we do the same thing here.
Really?
So you can come in 24/7. We have our whole gym, 4 bays, so you can come in and practice whenever you want. We use pretty much all of our technology. So we have, besides our 3D system we do for our evaluation, we use another system called K-Vest or K-Coach. Mm-hmm. And if instructors are working on a certain move or a certain position and it works with that and we get their okay, we'll actually put a program in there under your name that say, I want to work on posture. Mm-hmm. We'll build your posture in of where you want to be. And when you get into that posture, it plays music. So if you set up and you're not in that posture, it tells you, like, oh, you're set up different today.
Oh, interesting.
And so we try to, the biggest thing to improvement is quality always wins. I don't have to go hit balls for 6 hours a day. If I'm very diligent in my high quality, sometimes it's more valuable in 40 minutes than what I would do in 6 hours. So we tried to make the facility set up for that improvement of, we joke that we want to take away every possible excuse from everybody to get better. If they put in the work, you should improve.
How many square feet is your Rockville?
We're about 2,400 square foot in Rockville. The Ashburn now is 6,000 square feet.
That's a big upgrade. I mean, I don't want to say Rockville's tight, but you got a lot going on there in a small space, and you've been 14 years there.
Yeah.
So what prompted you to want to expand in Northern Virginia?
Well, Northern Virginia, we had a lot of students coming over from the Northern Virginia area, especially out in the Ashburn area. So we started to look at that. This actually was way bigger than what was initially in our vision.
Okay.
But finding space was difficult. And then when we joined with Pat and Lisa, we decided to open up more space to even make it more of a performance facility. We're adding a little more technology. We just have a little more comfort from a space. The same.
Double down on this, but like the Raspberry Golf Academy, they're going to use this in off season in bad weather. Kind of use this as an indoor facility.
Well, some of their instructors have the option of being able to do that, but.
Okay.
Every instructor actually can use our indoor facility.
Gotcha.
They can either rent time in the bays and use everything during the winter, or we have a rule that if you're a member of the facility, your instructor can come in and teach you lessons at any time, and we don't charge the instructor anything. So if you brought in your instructor and you reserved a bay,
I can bring my coach.
You could bring your coach in, and they can teach, use whatever technology they want to use. Because, like I said, our number one goal is improvement. Yeah. Like, we want to give people a place to get better. And we can face it, for us, Washington, D.C. isn't necessarily a professional golf hub.
Yeah.
But a lot of us want to play good golf. Mm-hmm. And you almost get to see part of that team and be part of that team setup that the tour players, if you want to know why tour players are good, they have a massive team around them. They have their physios, they have their therapists, they have their trainers, they have their swing coach. They might even have a full swing coach and a short game coach. They have a massive team around them that tries to work together. And one of the things, even at that aspect, sometimes it's hard to work together.
Yep.
And so we started trying to build a facility that it made it easier for everybody to communicate.
So the business model here, though, is like a typical gym, monthly memberships kind of thing?
Yeah, monthly memberships. We also include training in all of our memberships. So we kind of like, here's the price. This includes everything that you want. It makes it kind of a one-stop shop of, you know, we see you every week. We might see you twice a week. We might, if you're driving far away, have people that come in once a month.
So you'll have whatever you're paying per month might include bay usage and certain number of hours of training or a certain number of hours of work with a trainer.
Like a typical membership here would be eight credits a month that you can use either to rent, like reserve an hour in one of the bays.
Okay.
But also one of the things we're doing this year, and especially we're going to get started, is doing some drop-in member classes as well. So say we just have a general speed class or a flexibility or a warm-up class. Mm-hmm. And so you can use a credit for either one of those. So you can either do eight, you could rent the bay for 8 hours a month.
Got
it. So you get 2 hours a week of practice time, or you can mix and match. We try to give you flexibility. And then most of the people are training every week or multiple times a week. As far as the facility goes, and that way we kind of keep you on a schedule. If you travel, we don't say, hey, it's only 4 a month. We're like, you have this, and we can roll it over. So if you travel for 2 weeks, you might come back and train more. Mm-hmm. When you get back, to get back into it, train before. You have a big golf trip coming up to, we have a lot of guys who travel. So maybe you're going to Scotland and you have to play 8 rounds in 9 days. We might ramp up your training just to get your fitness level up a little bit before you head over.
You've been in this game for 14 years with your own business, but probably closer to 20 kind of in the industry. Golf fitness has exploded. There's no question about that. Golf in general kind of ebbed and flowed, but it's exploding right now again.
Mm-hmm.
You use so much technology, and there's so many things, in your own evaluation and all these different tools to help people improve their performance and their mobility and their flexibility and their strength. What is this industry? What does golf fitness look like 5-10 years? Is there technology that you think is coming that can help coaches like yourself?
I mean, it's amazing what happens in years. Like, we joked in surgical time, like an ACL when I was in college was 16 months if you came back. Mm-hmm. And by the end of my 6 years of college, by the finished master's, we had it down to 5.5 months, like full return to play. So in 5 or 10 years, technology could be amazing. I know we have a wired 3D system because it's the best one on the market. Mm-hmm. for accuracy for data, but it's wired. Uh-huh. There's a lot of people who are trying to come out with markerless things, and there's a few companies, but for us right now, the margin of error is too big for what we want. But it would be way more convenient if I didn't have to have you wired up.
At some point, you think that can be all done with cameras.
We're hoping. I mean, it'd be so much nicer because then anywhere you are, you could literally take cameras and we could break down the information.
Sure.
It'd make it a lot easier versus our system. We're kind of locked in where we are. Mm-hmm. We use our other system is a wireless version but it has sensors, wearable tech. And so sometimes instructors who use it on the golf, they'll actually go on the golf. You can go on the golf course with that.
Right,
so instructor, not us, but an instructor could be like, hey, there's a weird lie out here. Let's work on set up to that lie. But we use it to also help people understand where they are in space. Because a lot of times feeling real, when we do our education for instructors, we have a picture of the Grand Canyon and we have feel on one side and real on the other. Mm-hmm. And even when we talk to the best players, if you think about it from a 3D perspective, 6 degrees is 1 second on a clock. So every tick of the clock is 6 degrees of rotation on a clock.
Okay.
we were working with a player and their coach, and they wanted their shoulder plane a little steeper. And so he asked to make the shoulder plane like 3 to 4 degrees steeper. What we saw was barely anything. Yeah. And when we asked the player, he felt like he put his head between his knees.
That's crazy.
And that, we're talking, this is a player on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
So even the best players, when you hear them talk, mm-hmm. it's what they're feeling, sure. not what really happens. That's why if you try some of the things you hear a player say,
yeah.
it's not always effective, because that's their feel, not your feel.
Yeah, interesting. Speaking of that, I mean, when you look at some, I kind of had a note here, because there's, you know, we're talking about kind of just, this is kind of a more broader topic, but when you're looking at some of these PGA Tour players, because I think there's so many, whether you're a hardcore golfer, whether you're a weekend hacker, when you're talking about fitness and mobility in the golf swing, and you're looking at some of these guys on tour, and some of them are just so wildly different. And I think when you're talking about golf fitness and mobility, one of the ones that just jumps out, I think, a lot of times when people are having this conversation is John Rahm. Mm-hmm. And in part because he's such a big dude, but and also because he's able to generate so much power in such a short backswing.
Yeah. I mean, and you were talking TPI earlier. Talk about one of the biggest TPI guys out there.
Is he?
Yeah, I mean, his coach is Dave Phillips, who's with Greg at TPI. Mm-hmm. He's got some physical issues that they've worked around. And
doesn't he famously have his right foot?
I believe it's club foot.
Yeah.
And so they've worked around his ability to use that side of his body very yeah. well. And that's where that whole magical thing, like Greg and Dave from TPI have this connection of Dave understands so much of the body mm-hmm. and what's going on and how it influences what's happening in the swing. And then Greg could be like, hey, if we ask him to do this, might look right or technically be normal,
yeah.
but for this person, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. So with him, they just be able to develop some things in his swing and create tons of power. But another kind of dangerous thing, especially as we're older, and if say we all like say we want to lose some weight, say I want to drop like 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, if we change body types, our swing planes are going to change with that.
Sure.
And that's why if you're doing that, you definitely probably want a coach to be looking over you on those mm-hmm. sides, because
somewhat famously happened with Jason Duffner. It seemed like he lost yeah. his gut and lost his swing with it.
David Duvall. There's been multiple players that,
yeah.
you know, we've seen players get more fit and actually start hitting the ball shorter, because power is mass times acceleration.
Right.
So if I drop mass and I don't increase acceleration, mm-hmm. technically I have less force.
I'm not going to lose any weight. I'm good.
Yeah. So, you know, so we're just aware of that, and that's, you know, I'd like to say that some of our strengths here in the yeah. facility is because we are golfers and we all play, is sometimes, you know, we all get frustrated and we have somebody to bounce ideas off of and understand what's happening, and yeah. just be able to talk to you as a normal person, it helps you understand it.
It's sure.
we all get frustrated. So sometimes frustration is part of growth, and sometimes it's a nice event to somebody who gets it, right?
Sure.
Has gone through the same issues on a different level.
Yeah, totally. Well, we'll start to wrap this up. But so you're going to have a grand opening here, which will once it's you have an idea of the date, but once it's solidified, we'll share help you get some folks out here. But I am curious. So this is brand new. I mean, he's only been open yeah. for a few weeks. Unless you don't want to share, like what is an ideal number of clients in a space like this, 6,400 square feet?
Our initial goal. And we have a soft cap in Rockville as well. Our initial goal out here is about 250 members.
Okay.
What's
Rockville?
Rockville, we're at 125.
Okay.
At capacity. At that point, we're looking at space. We want to make sure everybody has use of the facility.
Sure.
So if you're doing a membership, you can actually get in and out and use the space when it's convenient for you. And also from a staffing perspective, is our kind of sweet spot is we want one staff member for every 50 members.
Okay.
So there's always people available, mm-hmm. and most of our members are people who even aren't members who come in and train. Like you have your trainer,
yeah.
you have who you like, but everything we do is team based. So one thing we really try hard is, say they're on vacation or your trainer's on vacation, but you're not. We don't necessarily want to let you lose that routine because
yeah.
routine is strong, and so we communicate with each other pretty heavily and can bounce and. Also, we might give you recommendations. All of our staff has different specialties. Mm. So if there's an area that, say, you started working with me because you're coming off an injury.
Yep.
And now we need to switch it to something. Jake is great with like neurological stuff. He studied that in school.
Okay.
And now we need to work on motor pattern. I might be like, hey, Jake's actually, I think you'll get a, this will be more beneficial for you to train with Jake than with me. Or if, you know, somebody else, we need to do strength and power. Mm-hmm. We have people who've been through like Olympic lifting and can coach that. Okay. So we look at it as a team base, like it's to give you the best experience possible or whatever's going to help you the most.
Sure.
And we all are proficient in that stuff, but there's better. And sometimes it's a personality thing. Like some people don't like working with me. Some people like working with me. Some people like working with Jake out here. Some people don't.
I can't imagine that. I mean, we haven't even brought it up. I mean, you've won Golf Digest top 50. I don't forget what was the actual title. I'm sure you know the top 50 fitness golf fitness
top golf coach, fitness professionals.
Top 50 golf fitness professionals. How many years have they done that?
It started probably 2018 was the first one.
Okay.
So we've been able to keep that.
Have you been every year? You've been named it?
Every year. They do it every other year, like a top instructors list.
Congratulations on that. It's impressive.
Thank you. And we just, I mean,
are
I always surround myself with smart
more
people.
Competition in the air?
We're seeing a lot, but even the guys in the area that we're friends with, Dave Maloney is another top 50 guy out of Tyson's.
Okay.
Most of us are pretty, like the golf fitness world, amongst us who do it on a professional level, we're pretty friendly with each other.
Sure.
Constantly talking. If I have a player that's somewhere and something happens, we're going to use the resources to get them in with somebody there.
Yeah.
Because we had a couple players come up a few weeks ago that were just in town for something with their coach.
Yeah.
Something happened and we needed to get them in to do corrections. And first thing that happens is we call their trainer or their PT and say, hey, this is what we're seeing. Is there something we should be aware of?
Yep.
As soon as I'm done, I'm going to give you the, like, I'm going to tell you what we did.
Right.
So, like, competition, yes and no, but we're also pretty specialized in what we do.
Yeah.
So, and I love the education, so I'd love just to get more people involved in the golf fitness world of being a trainer. It's like the more trainers, as we open this facility, finding people was very difficult.
Right.
Like to find a full staff for the facility.
Oh, is that right?
So it's tough because we want people who play. We want somebody, and we're lucky as we're basically fully staffed
like
out
anything,
here.
Though, as this industry becomes so commonplace and so used by golfers of all levels, there's just going to be that much more need, and it's a career path a lot more people are going to start doing.
That's what we're hoping, and like we're lucky actually. Our last two trainers we hired were actually clients of ours for a long time. So one of our newest guys out here is a guy named Zach Henry. He plays a lot of Virginia amateur stuff.
Okay.
Very, very good player. But he's been training with us off and on for the last 9 years.
Oh.
So
now he works.
He's back and working for us. And we love that because of the fact it shows they understand what we do. They understand our passion and why we do it. So it is nice at times. Like, you want to see them succeed professionally, like playing professional golf, but you love that people come back and say, hey, this is what we wanted.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know you've got a couple of evals scheduled yourself here, but I appreciate you giving me an hour or so this morning. And congratulations on the new facility. This place looks awesome. And looking forward to coming out for the grand opening.
Yeah, appreciate it. Love to have everybody stop out and just even see the place. Like, it's really hard to explain kind of what we did in both Rockville and here without walking in the door, for sure.
They're very different.
Yeah, but
I mean,
same style, but
same,
very
same
different.
Stuff, yeah. But I mean, it's, you know, it's size and, you know, one place.
The scale of this is definitely newer. Yeah. I mean, obviously 2009 when you build something is very different than in 2023.
Right.
When you build something. But we're hoping kind of everybody listening out there, we're looking at kind of that first full weekend in October.
Okay.
Sometime there, we'll do a big open house. We'll have some areas set up, doing some demos, doing some things like that, and just come out, walk through, see the place, ask questions. We'll
maybe grab a beer across the street.
Grab a beer across the street at Lost Rhino, and we joke around that's the boardroom.
Very cool.
So,
all right, thanks, Jason.
All right, thanks,
appreciate
Alex.
I don't have a good golf game, but I don't really care. I'm a regular dude living in D.C., and I want to know about D.C.-centric golf stuff. If you can tell me something that I don't already know, then that is great for me. I don't want the regular stuff. I want exciting stuff. I want different stuff. I want stuff I can't hear elsewhere. But I want it to be about DC golf.